This episode is brought to you by Cars.com. When you add your car to your garage on Cars.com, you'll unlock access to real-time insights into how much your car is worth. Plus, view its historical and projected value to decide when to sell. So when the time is right, you can secure an instant offer from a local dealership or sell it yourself on Cars.com. Start tracking your car's value with your garage on Cars.com. This episode is brought to you by Jiffy Lube. Cars can be a big investment, so it's important to take care of them. I once got a car that I started out with 25,000 miles on. I got it to over 200,000 miles because I took care of it. You know how you take care of a car? You take care of the maintenance, the oil, the brakes, all that stuff. And if you don't, you can have a car just completely fall apart. When your car needs maintenance, head to Jiffy Lube. They provide automotive excellence at speed. Get your oil changed, brakes checked, tons of other multi-care services. It's all done by expertly trained technicians who actually care about taking care of you and your car. Jiffy Lube, car more. To find coupons and start an instant online estimate, visit JiffyLube.com.
Welcome back to Through the Ringer. I'm your host, Tate Frazier. It is Tuesday, so you know what that means. I'm in studio with the Ringer's very own Kevin O'Connor, KOC. Good to see you, man.
Great to see you too, Tate. How you doing?
Good. It's great to be back in studio. March Madness. We have just turned the page into April, so it's championship. You and I got to go to some games out there. It was fun here in the West Regional.
Unbelievable. Right behind the main broadcast. Right. Beautiful seats for three great games here in LA. I had an awesome time with you, Tate. Tate, yeah. And Kyle from OSP.
Yeah. Shout out to Brian Anderson. He was so nice to us, and we got to watch some good basketball, and now we get to talk about some basketball because we're going to talk about some trends. You know what that means. We're going to do some Through the Ringer trends here. And we're going to start with your top trend, KOC, Luka Doncic. He has entered the MVP picture, according to you. What have you seen from Luka?
100%. Luka, how many weeks ago was it, Tate? About a month ago.
Yeah, sounds right.
About a month ago, I said to you, it's a two-man race for NBA MVP between Giannis and Jokic. And those two guys are still in it. They're still at the top, in my opinion. But Luka has entered the race. Luka is in that third spot right now, in my opinion. He has surpassed SGA on the year. He's averaging 34, 10, and 9 with absurd efficiency, playing better defense than he ever has in his life. And the fact that he has Dallas in a position now to potentially take the 4 seed from the Clippers, get home court advantage in the first round, to me, I think that is one of the reasons why you'll see more voters put him into great consideration. Think about Dallas this year. Kyrie's missed 22 games. Lively's missed 19 games. Kleba's missed 37 games. Josh Green has missed 20 games. They made two big trades at the deadline to get PJ Washington and Daniel Gafford. The team has undergone injuries, changing lineups, new acquisitions, and yet Luka has been that stabilizing force throughout the entire year to put them in a position where they could get home court in the loaded Western Conference. So even though he might not have quite as many wins as Jokic, and even though, you know, I think for Dallas you can use the wins against him, how much are you really going to use that when it's 6-7 wins difference? To me, Luka has done more than enough on the court to draw serious consideration to win his first MVP.
Yeah, that's the trend. That's the headline. A three-man race for NBA MVP. And you have a five-man ballot, though, right now. We want to take a look at that. We want to see KOC's ballot here. I mean, Jokic is in first right now. You got Giannis there at number two. Like you said, Luka coming in at number three, but it's really a three-man race. And then we get into SGA and Jalen Brunson, I think, surprising there at number five. What have you seen from Brunson? What do you like about what he's got going right now?
It's similar to the Luka side of things. You've had so many injuries for the Knicks this year. You get OG Anunoby at the deadline, before the deadline. He's awesome. He's been out. Julius Randle misses time. Mitchell Robinson misses virtually the entire season. You've had other guys in and out of the lineup, changing rotation, and yet Jalen Brunson, he's averaging like 28 points per game, almost 30 points per game. He's carrying that offense, one of the heaviest usage guys in the entire league. If you're looking for a fifth guy, the fifth guy on anybody's ballot isn't going to win MVP, whether it's
kind of your favorite amongst the other best.
Yeah, right? Whether it's Tatum or Kawhi or whoever it might be. For me right now today, it's Jalen Brunson. He has the Knicks in a position where they could get not just the 4 seed, but maybe even the 3 seed if the Cavs keep falling, because they have been really, really struggling.
Well, I'm a big Jalen Brunson guy because I'm a college basketball fan, and my top trend is tangentially related to college basketball, kind of just basketball at large. We're talking about the bigs, folks. The bigs are back, and it all started with Nikola Jokic, who is your top MVP candidate. He was a little late to his press conference because he wanted to watch the magic of DJ Burns, who was playing for NC State, and he apologized to the reporters, but then he explained and professed his love for DJ Burns' game. So this was good to see some big-to-big connections here, an international guy, an American guy, and DJ Burns, but we all just love the bigs when they're down on the block, and it was nice to see Jokic give Burns some love.
You see the clip of Burns after the game talking about, hey, Jokic said he was watching you, and he was like, oh my God, he looked like starstruck in a way. Like, Jokic was watching me?
Right.
I mean, he's like, I'm not that similar to him, but I think we're similar in the way we, you know, use touch shots around the rim. Like, he was starstruck.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, dude, that game by DJ Burns, first time for a lot of people across the world watching him and learning about him. He's listed at 275. I think that's probably a little low. He's a big guy at 6'7", 6'8", and the touch, man.
Mm.
Crazy. I looked up his numbers on Synergy. 55% this year on floaters, 45% on hook shots. The dude has insane touch. I mean, the dude is a lot of fun.
Now we're going to do some superlatives, some of our weekly awards here on Through the Ringer. We love a graphic. Look at that. Weekly awards, KOC. We're moving up in the world. I'll start with mine. First of the week, Victor Wembanyama. We all love Victor Wembanyama. He got his first fine of his NBA career for throwing the ball into the stands on Friday. First off, did you see this, and what are your thoughts on Wimby getting his first NBA fine?
I love any intensity. I mean, I think it's only going to be a matter of time until we see Victor
right. Get
fined for, you know, trashing officials after the game or something like that, because soon enough the Spurs are going to be
winning
games.
Good toss, by the way. I like that toss. Yeah,
lefty, solid. You know, ambidextrous player.
Uh-huh. Yeah, you love to see the left hand. That's something that you got to evolve into. So
for
more
sure. Growth
in Wimby's game there. So that was nice. First of the week. My next one, we talked about Wimby, future of the league. Let's talk about a guy who's been the past and still the present, LeBron James. Quote of the week, LeBron says to our friend Jovan Buha, he says, quote, I don't have much time left, end quote. What do you read? LeBron's always putting out headlines for a reason. This is my quote of the week. Why did LeBron say this now, KOC?
I mean, How much time does not much time actually mean when he's been in the league for over mm-hmm. 2 decades? Does not much time mean 2 years?
I think he said this in 2015. So we're almost about a decade ago. He said the same thing.
That's exactly. Like, does it mean when Vegas becomes an expansion team in a couple of years? Does it mean in, you know, 10 years from now? Does it mean 5 years, 6 years? I don't know what LeBron means, but regardless of what he means, he is near the end, considering he's already over 2 decades into this thing.
Mm. What about Bronny? Is it Bronny related at all? Is he trying to put a little feeler out there that maybe wherever Bronny may go, LeBron may go as well? Is there something to that?
I mean, we saw Bronny at USC this past year. He's not ready to help an NBA team. He could barely help a bad college team. So I think with Bronny, go back to school for another year or two.
Got a new coach potentially there at USC.
New coach, get that NIL money and you know, come out a little bit more ready to, you know, join a team maybe with your dad or maybe on your own if he continues improving.
He could always go to Duquesne, too. You got Drew Joyce taking over as head coach there. He could be a future Duke. Who knows? We'll figure it out. We did my two superlatives. I turn it over to you. You got riser of the week. What say you, KOC?
Let's go with Donovan Clingan, the UConn center. You talk about how bigs are back, Tate. Clingan could be moving on up in the NBA draft as well. He'd lead UConn to a back-to-back title potentially. He's had, through 4 games in the tournament, 14 blocks. He had 8 in one game, 5 in another game. The way in which UConn contained Terrence Shannon, partially due to another potential lottery pick in Stephon Castle, but Clingan and Castle together, what a dominant defensive duo. And the way Clingan's improved with more minutes this season, you know, dropping his foul rate, continuing to dominate, protecting the rim, and also showing more mobility on the perimeter. In addition to the fact he's a dominant finisher at the rim, he has good hands, he can pass. It's no wonder why he's rising up draft boards. I have him currently 3rd on my board. Maybe that's a bit high, but I feel like in a draft without any certainties, Clingan is one of the safest prospects, and he still has some upside as a big 7'2" center.
And last year, he was playing behind the most outstanding player in Adama Sanogo. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, he was a guy who came in and showed probably the best version of himself in spurts last year. That's when people fell in love with him going into the season. He's a lottery guy. He was hurt at the start of the year. He kind of looked a little bit slow. He didn't look as good with the ball in his hands, kind of lost some of that fluidity. But as he's gotten healthier, he's starting to look better. And And like you said, Illinois, they were just driving into him. Brad Underwood said if he blocks 100, he blocks 100. It felt like he blocked 100, KOC.
I mean, with Klingon, you nailed it, right? Like, before the season, well, last year before he was clearly out of the draft, I had him in the late teens. Mm-hmm. Entering the season, I had him, I believe, number 8 or number 9. And then he got hurt. He seemed a little off at some point through the midway through the year, and I dropped him to the late teens again. He has continually moved up and up and up and up, and I think with him, he's very clearly a top 10 guy right now. Where he ends up going will largely depend on how the lottery shakes out and team needs, but I mean, would you agree with me? He's UConn's best player.
Yeah, I mean, I think he's UConn's best player. I think that you could argue maybe like a Cam Spencer or a Caravan as their most important player, but you're just doing semantics. It kind of reminds me of Villanova, where we had like DiVincenzo, Brunson, Mikal Bridges. It's like you can pick your poison as to which one is the most valuable, but they got a lot of talent, and that's the reason why they're so good. So
on any night, it could be a Castle, right? Even either, right, too. Well, he might have been the best player defending Terrence Shannon, one of the best scorers in college basketball.
And look at the Final Four. It's all bigs, right? Yeah. Every team has a big that got them there. So we did the riser of the week. Now let's do the faller of the week. It's not in college basketball, though. It's an international prospect, KOC.
Yeah, let's go international here, because I think we're so focused on college basketball, but games are still happening overseas. And Zachary Richechet is a guy, a French prospect, 6'8"
good
forward.
Pronunciation there. I like it.
Richechet is somebody who, entering the season, I had him 25th on my board, raw prospect, but then he shot the absolute heck out of the ball to begin the season. Over his first 34 games, he hit 48% of his three-pointers.
Wow.
But in the 14 games since Tate, 24.5%. And that's closer to his career average of 32% from three in his past 3 years overseas. So the concern with Richechet has been, okay, we know he's kind of a smart player, versatile defender, he's a cutter, he can make good decisions on the floor, but how good is he as a shooter? It looked like he got way better at the start of the year, and thus the reason why he rose into the top five and even number one on many draft boards. But in his 4 years overseas, he's at 71% from the free throw line. Like I said, he's shooting below 30% right now from three over the past 14 games. He's closer to 30% in his career. What if he just actually had a hot streak at the beginning of the year, and that's it? And for me, like, he has been
saying it was more of a blip than reality.
Yes,
right?
Maybe that was an outlier streak there, and so I've moved him down my board behind some of these rising college prospects, Donovan Klingon, Dalton Connect. I think with Richechet, how much do you want to balance youth and risk versus I don't want to say certainty completely, because you can draft an older prospect that can still bust, but I feel pretty good about the fact Connect is going to be a good off-ball scorer and Klingon's going to be a good rim protector. I think that's safe. Richechet, he might just be another guy, and unless he proves it before the draft in June.
The French people are not going to be happy to hear this, KOC.
And I love the French.
I know you love the French. I love the French. They're going to be upset. They're going to be shaking their fists in the air and say, why, KOC? Why not our
first
guy?
First you stole Embiid.
Yeah. Yes, right. They're going to be upset. Let's have some fun. You talked about older guys that are going to be entering the draft picture. New kid on the block this week. We are going to Alabama via North Dakota. We're going to talk about the Dakota Durant is his nickname. Of course, I'm talking about Grant Nelson, who did his best impression of the greatest player I've ever seen. You know, I mean, Kevin Durant at his peak of his powers. He did this against North Carolina in the Sweet 16, 24 points, knocking down threes, protecting the rim at an elite level. What do you like from Grant Nelson, and what can he project to be at the next level?
I mean, Grant Nelson looked like the best version of himself against your Tar Heels. He was protecting the rim, swatting shots away. He was finishing.
The 6'11" size really clicked in.
Oh, my goodness. Yes. I mean, he was finishing well around the basket. He hit threes.
Switching the ball to his left hand in the air, going up and under. Incredible stuff.
It was absurd. He had 24 points in the game. He had 24 points on opening night of the season against Morehead State. And then to go all year, kind of underwhelming. He didn't shoot the ball well at all this season. Then he shoots the lights out and doing everything on the floor. He looked like a legitimate NBA draft prospect after a lot of iffy months for him. So I think he definitely put himself back on the radar as a potential second rounder. And if he shoots, you know, really well on pre-draft workouts, who knows? He could be a riser.
And where does he kind of project? I guess more like a four, right? Like a stretch four type. You put him next to, we were talking about Utah, for example. Maybe you put him next to Walker Kessler and you got a nice little 4-5 combo
for sure. Yeah. I think with Nelson, it's so much of it's going to depend on what level does he reach as a shooter. He finally cracked 80% from the free throw line this year with Bama. Can he become a guy that's actually a high 30s from behind the arc? That'll really determine what his level is in the NBA, because he's got a lot of tools.
Yeah, and he closed out those games at the free throw line as well. So that was an encouraging sign if you're a big Grant Nelson believer. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to do some power rankings with KOC. We'll see you on the other side.
This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
Welcome back to Through the Ringer. We're still here in studio. I am still here with Kevin O'Connor. And Kevin O'Connor, I bring you in here every week and I say, I need power rankings. I need to see your power rankings. This week, we're going to do power rankings. These are teams in the NBA under the most pressure to close the season, according to Kevin O'Connor. And let's start in Philadelphia with the Sixers, KOC. Why are they under so much pressure right now?
They're getting Joel Embiid back on Tuesday against the Oklahoma City Thunder. What a great gift for them, of course, but they're currently in the play-in. So I think for the Sixers, they are the team under the most pressure to close the season, because you want to move up here. You want to avoid Milwaukee. You want to avoid Boston and get that sixth seed and have an opportunity to potentially face Cleveland or, you know, whoever might move up to that spot. New York could. You just don't want to face Boston. You don't want to face Milwaukee. So with Joel Embiid coming back, how will he look? Will he look like his MVP candidate level self? Will he look like a diminished version of himself? Those are big questions now. So I think the Sixers are very clearly the team under the most pressure right now, because they have legitimate finals hopes if he's healthy.
And the questions still remain with Embiid when it comes to the postseason, right? That's what everyone is still waiting on. We've seen the MVP season. We've seen him play at that high clip. Now we're all ready to see that next step in the postseason. So that's where the pressure comes from.
Absolutely. And you want to get chemistry. You got Buddy Hield at the trade deadline. He hasn't been able to play with Joel Embiid, and he's been up and down for the Sixers. You want to get them to build in a little bit of chemistry ahead of the playoffs, especially if maybe you don't get out of the play-in and you do have to face, you know, a team in the first in the play-in in order to get a first round matchup. You want to be ready. Like, you can't miss another year. Like, there's people that say sometimes, oh, no, there's no reason to bring Embiid back. Of course there's reason. You're contending for a championship. There's no guarantee he'll be even more healthy next season. This is the window's open now. You got to go for it. Winning a championship is all that matters.
Especially when you got one of the guys. There are not many of them. There's probably five or six in reality in the NBA. Embiid is one of those guys. So it's good to have him back. You mentioned the Cavaliers. Mitchell is back for them, but they're trying to hold on to that three seed in the East.
And Mitchell has not been good. He's played four games since he got hurt in late February. He's had games where he shot 5 of 16, 4 of 13, 4 of 13 again, and then 3 of 12. The Cavaliers are 2-2 in those games that Mitchell has played this month, but he does not look like anything resembling what he did prior to this injury. Darius Garland, who we talked about a couple weeks back on Through the Ringer, has not been able to step up in his absence.
That's what you were hoping for.
So I think for Cleveland at this point, you are looking like a potential easy out in the first round of the playoffs, unfortunately, despite all the good progress the team has made overall this season. And I think for them, by the end of the season, it's almost not about the standings as much as it's about getting Mitchell right. You need Mitchell to be right before the playoffs begin in April, regardless of your first round matchup, or else you got no shot and you might be out in four or five games.
What does the offseason look like for Cleveland if it does go bad? Let's say the Sixers move up, you face them in the first round, you lose. Like, is this a crossroads type of moment for Cleveland? Not to throw Bone Thugs and Harmony into it, but it could be tough.
It could be. I mean, I think there's still big questions about the team. Mobley has looked better scoring from the perimeter since he returned midseason from injury. I think it's going to come down to Darius Garland. What do you do with him? Can Garland and Mitchell coexist? Is he really worth it as your $200 million point guard? Can you even find a landing spot for him?
Spurs.
Maybe the Spurs. Mm-hmm. That would be a nice, really, really nice fit with Victor Wembanyama, and they got money to spend too.
Yeah, that sounds like a fit to me. Mm-hmm. But that's an off-season conversation, mm-hmm. KFC. Yes. We'll keep it in season. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about the Clippers because they're another team that's under some pressure right now.
Well, they just won three games in a row. They're all against bad teams, including your Hornets. No, no offense.
Hey, it's okay. But, we're all right. We're waiting for DJ Burns. Okay,
but they're only two games up right now on multiple teams holding on to that forward seed. Not that the Clippers have anything resembling home court advantage. Mm-hmm. You still want a preferential seeding. So I think for the Clippers, it's almost not even about the seeding for them as much as can they get right? Can they flip the switch? You've had Ty Lue talk about that. Kawhi Leonard talked about it. James Harden has, questioned whether they have it. Mm-hmm. And I'm still questioning that right now after they were arguably the most dominant team in the league midway through the season. They started slow and they're finishing terribly. For the Clippers, they got to get something right before the playoffs begin.
Yeah, they had the worst start possible. They couldn't win a game. There were questions, will they win a game with James Harden? Yes. Then they take over the NBA. They're arguably the best team in the NBA, and now they're back in kind of cruise control. It's 100%. Very interesting. Yeah,
I mean, like, is it cruise control for the Clippers, or is it...
Are we off the rails?
Or are we off the rails with three stars that look like they're in their 30s? Mm-hmm. That's what it looks like right now, and that's the concern there, where despite how great they were at mid-year, maybe they peaked far too soon. And the Clippers are a team with their age, with the upcoming contract situation for Paul George and James Harden. This is a team under pressure, from a big picture standpoint. They're opening a new arena next year. What will that team look like? Will they be a team that's an early out despite the big investment they've made and the lack of assets they have moving forward? They have to make a deep run this year, or else they may never be in this position again.
Mm. Steve Ballmer does not like to hear that. So, especially with the new arena, the Intuit Dome, we see it. It's really nice, and they're going to go all in mm-hmm. for it. So we'll have some fun. Last team, the Warriors. We talked about them a little bit, but Houston is nipping at their heels. They're trying to stay in the play-in scenario. What have you seen in Golden State, and what do we expect?
I mean, it almost goes without saying with them. You talk about having a guy. Like, the Sixers have a guy in Embiid. You got to go for it. The Warriors have a guy in Stephen Curry. If you miss the playoffs, if you miss the play-in, the play-in, you got to be kidding me. There's no way right. that you can miss the play-in with Stephen Curry still playing at the level that he is. Even though Draymond Green has missed all this time due to suspension and done so many goofy things on the court over the year to put himself in that situation, he's still a dominant defender. If you're going to miss the playoffs with these guys playing at that level, that is one of the biggest disappointments any team could have this year, especially if it's to a young team like the Rockets.
Yeah, let's look at some of these games that we have Tuesday night. If you're tuning in, the NBA is happening. I know it's March Madness, but we got the Final Four this weekend. In between, you can watch some of these NBA games. We got Spurs Nuggets at the Nuggets in Denver. This should be a fun game, KOC. You're going to be watching. What should we watch in this one?
Victor versus Jokic. How could I not be watching? That's going to be sensational. The two-time MVP against a future four-time MVP, potentially.
Ooh, I like that prediction. Yeah. There you go.
Maybe
that'll
five
be fun.
Time, six
yeah,
time.
Yeah, who knows? Don't start counting out. LeBron did that before. Did not work out well for him. But that'll be a fun game. Spurs and Nuggets. We also have Mavs taking on the Warriors. You mentioned Luka before. He's been playing on a tear lately, and now he gets to play the Warriors.
Yeah, I mean, that's obviously a must-win for both these teams. Mavericks want to continue moving up in the standings, get home court with their sensational home crowd in Dallas, and Golden State's just fighting for dear life to hold on to a spot in the play-in.
Yeah, and Kyrie will be playing in that game. It's always interesting when Kyrie is in the Bay. The Golden State fans mm-hmm. are very aware, so I always like that interaction because of that Game 7, so that'll be fun. Last one that we're going to talk about on Tuesday, we had Clippers going to Sacramento to take on the Kings. Will the Kings be lighting the beam? Will they get a win, or will the Clippers keep this win streak going?
I mean, the Clippers have beat three, subpar teams in a row. The Kings have been up and down. Like, the Kings are unpredictable, to be honest with you, Tate. Mm-hmm. They go from having these big wins against, Minnesota, a playoff opponent, and then they lose to a team on a 10-game losing streak earlier this season. And I believe it was Charlotte earlier this year that they lost to in Sacramento when they were on a losing streak.
Good team.
They're just... they were good
just
then.
Just kidding.
I mean, it's just so hard to predict this Kings team. They are up and down. The Clippers, I mean, on the road after a three-game winning streak, I'm going to lean towards them possibly riding it out. But the Kings, who knows with them.
How do we feel about the Kings? Like, last year, obviously so much excitement. They were the three seed. You go into the, to the playoffs. Everyone's excited about this team. Are we fatigued with this team? I just feel like we're not talking as much about the Kings and their expectations as we were a year ago.
I mean, to me, like, I think the Kings are a team that – should have been more aggressive in making a trade at the deadline, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. They kind of pass on the opportunity to go after OG Anunoby, pass on the chance to go to Pascal Siakam, largely due to concern about those players re-signing. However, I think for them, the window was open in this wide-open league right now. Yes, the Nuggets are the favorite in the West. Yes, the Celtics have some, you know, they could win 65 games in the East. But none of these teams are necessarily unbeatable in a seven-game series. So for the Kings, I think their window could potentially shut sooner than they anticipated, considering the rise of some younger teams. OKC will get better. San Antonio, who knows how fast they'll get good, like the OKC did. Houston will get better. For the Kings, I just feel like they're just a rock-solid playoff team. That's a great story, and that's awesome for those fans, considering all the pain they went through for decades. I'm not trying to diminish that in any way. I just wish this team were in a position to chase the ultimate reward of winning a championship, which I don't think this current iteration of the roster is any position to compete for. They are more likely a first-round loss. Mm-hmm. And to me, doing that in back-to-back years, yes, it's a great story, but it's not the goal. And I hope for the Kings either this offseason or sometime next season that they can make a big acquisition in order to position themselves and their amazing fans to potentially compete for the ultimate reward in winning an NBA Finals.
Yeah, we need someone to have the gusto to say, yeah, I'll go to Sacramento and I'll sign there. Yes. And it's going to be a fun Final Four. KOC, I'll see you in Phoenix. Appreciate you coming on the show as always. Where can we find all your work? And then we'll let you go.
Over at theringer.com.
There you go. Simple as that. Appreciate KOC coming on the show. On the other side of this break, we have Cousin Sal joining us, and we got a lot to talk about with Cousin Sal, so stay tuned.
Cool. That worked out.
Welcome back to Through the Ringer. I'm still here in the studio, and joining us now, as he always does on Tuesdays, Cousin Sal. Sal, good to see you, man.
Yeah, great to see you, Tate. I'm back stateside, left the country for a while, decided that was a big mistake. I'm never doing it again, and I need to be back here with you.
Yeah, how was watching, you were over in Ireland, how was watching college basketball in Ireland? Can you give us a little bit of a sneak peek into what that experience was like? Was it good? Was it bad? Was it ugly?
A sneak peek is what I got at everything else in Ireland, because I couldn't open my eyes the next day as I'm up until like 3 a.m. Right. I'm not even kidding watching these 18-year-olds miss free throws. So it's a lot of fun. Beautiful country.
Yeah, though. Great country. And you're the best for sticking through it and watching March Madness. That's why you're an ally of the sports, Sal. We need you. And
that's right.
I need you for this game. My favorite game, of course. And we do this every single week. We do over-under reaction, Sal. Are you ready to play? Are you fired up? Do you have eyes open? That's good.
I'm ready to play. I wouldn't say I'm fired up, but I'm ready to play. That's the best you're going to get.
Yeah, let's do it. Let's play the game. We'll start with number one here. UConn, the Connecticut Huskies, is having the most dominant tournament run ever. What say you, Sal, over or under reaction?
Oof. All right, I'm going to say, I see where you're going with this. Mm-hmm. I'm going to say it's an overreaction, because UCLA, those teams in the 70s, what they went, like 7 in a row?
Yeah, pretty dominant.
And 9 out of 10. And so I think John Wooden would have something to say about this, although he's dead, so he probably has nothing to say about it. But back on your side with UConn, just pretty damn impressive. 4 wins by 110 points after covering every game last year in a tournament. Dan Hurley should be commended. I don't know if FanDuel has a Hall of Fame, but he should be in it. And I'm happy to induct him if it comes to that.
Yeah, let's get to Pahrump, Nevada ASAP, and let's get him into the Hall of Fame there, Sal. So, yeah, UConn is having a great tournament, to say the least. Another team that's having a great tournament, NC State, and I say this to you, Sal, DJ Horn's double middle finger picture from back in January against Wake Forest is what started NC State's magical run. What say you, Sal, over or under reaction?
Oh, man. I think it's an underreaction. Mm. I like this kid's story. You know, he grew up 10 minutes away from campus right there, and he flipped the bird to, what, Wake Forest, and then their fans stormed the court? Is that what happened?
Yeah, when you flipped the board? And somehow Filipowski was in the middle of it all. Yeah, it was crazy.
Listen, I'll say this. The middle finger is back, Tate. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you know that. You got the kid in the crowd with the middle finger. You got Horn, that's kickstarted this whole thing. But really who started it, I think, again, was Eli Manning flipping the bird on the Manning cast. So he really put the wheels in motion. And if NC State is to win this, he tangentially – should get, I don't know, a ring. He should get a cut. He should get to cut down the nets. He'll be part of another title indirectly.
He made it acceptable to give people the bird. Iron Eagle, his nickname is the bird. You know, his first year calling the Final Four. So it's a good day to be a bird in college basketball, especially if you're a middle bird or a middle Brooks who's playing some great basketball right now for NC State. Next one, Sal, talking about Alabama with Nick Saban's retirement and Nate Oates' first Final Four for the Tide. It's official. Alabama is a basketball school. Over or under reaction?
Well, first of all, you interviewed Nate Oates, and you told me it was not good. You told me you had a pull to... No, you haven't even done it yet. No, it's, I look forward to that. It's going to be great.
Yeah.
I am going to say I'll go along with this because it's going to piss off Alabama football fans, but it is an overreaction. This basketball team was fifth best in the conference. I don't think we'll see a day anytime soon where Alabama is fifth in the conference. Although I'll say this, Alabama football, if you look at it right now, 13-1 to win the title. That is a way, way wide margin right there than it has been. They were plus 600 or plus 650 heading into this year, which was a down year. So the gap is closing a little bit. Nate Oates, you know, if you can convince him, Tate, to do two or three commercials with a duck, the Aflac duck, maybe then we will be talking about Alabama basketball more.
Yeah, and the guy who kind of set this path forward, Mark Gottfried, he's got his old team NC State and his old team Alabama into the Final Four. So there you go.
Right.
It's a good time for Mark Gottfried. Next one, Sal. A heavenly force who was celebrated on Sunday played a role in Duke's exit from this year's NCAA tournament. Did my mom write this? I'm not sure. But what say you, Sal, over or under reaction?
I tweeted something like this, that Jesus answered everyone's prayers on Easter by ousting Duke.
Yes.
You know, just God and the devil going at it again. This
classic
time
the battle.
Blue devil. Not just the color of the devil is blue. But despite my dumb tweet, I'm going to say overreaction. Jesus doesn't care about college basketball. If he did, he would have put together some kind of high top sandal. I don't know if the NIL deals were different back then in his time. But, I'm going to say overreaction because I don't want to get in trouble with the Bible Belt.
Also, Grant Nelson for Alabama looked like he was, you know, Jesus, the Messiah.
That's
on the basketball court against my North Carolina Tar Heels. So not always a win for anyone on Tobacco Road other than NC State right now. Next one, Sal, uneven three-point lines are actually good for the game of basketball. A lot of drama about the women's regional final where the three-point lines are uneven. The coaches decided to play because they both had the same setup depending on what half it was. Over or under reaction, Sal, what say you?
I like it. I say it's an underreaction. 9 inches is a lot to be off, by the way, and make your own off-color joke you want right now. But how drunk do you have to be off 9 inches when you're putting down the line? It's crazy. Like, I've been in charge of putting the third base line down on a Sunday for an 8 a.m. game, and it's been pretty hazy, I will say. But, I mean, at this level of basketball, women's, men's, it shouldn't matter. But I like it. I say move it back anyway. Caitlin Clark is hitting three-pointers from the concession stand, right? So it doesn't make any sense. Move the line. Maybe even move it every TV timeout, Tate. Keep everybody guessing.
Yeah, and I've seen a lot of people talk about baseball stadiums, right? It's always different, the amount of feet to hit a home run. So, I mean, we've seen it in sports before where things are a little bit different, and they did have the same setup. So, we'll move on. I like that underreaction. Next one, Sal, going to the NBA. The 2024 Los Angeles Lakers will not make the NBA playoffs. Is that an overreaction or an underreaction?
All right, I'm going to say is an underreaction, but I need you to work through this with me. They are plus 112 to not make the playoffs. Now, I feel like there's a Lakers fan tax on this. Everybody's betting the jersey, like, oh, of course they're going to make the playoffs. Like, this should probably be plus 130, but let's figure this out together. They have 7 games left. They're a game and a half out of the 8th spot, which is what you want, right? Because you want to only have to win once to get into the playoffs in that 7-10 mess. They still have the Warriors, the Pelicans, and the T-Wolves. I think they're going to lose 3 more games. They're probably stuck. So if they're stuck in that 9th spot, they have to win 2 play-in games. They're going to be an underdog in one of them. I'm going for it. I know they'll get every call now and then, but I don't think they have enough in the tank. I think getting a plus number here is good.
Yeah, I like it as well. Also, LeBron's putting out quotes. We talked about with Kevin O'Connor about how he doesn't know how much time he has left, Sal, so he might want to save it for next season. Mm-hmm. We'll see what happens. Last one, my Panthers will win more games than our boss Bill Simmons' Patriots. They're both at 5.5 here if you look at the line. Is that an overreaction or an underreaction, Sal? I think you're going to get me in trouble.
I love this. I love it. You're going to get in trouble. It's an underreaction. I love that they're on the same level. man. This is the greatest. This game, if they played on a neutral field, would be a pick 'em. Can you imagine? I actually saw 4.5 for New England as an over-under when these came out last Wednesday, but then the sharps hit it, and it quickly became 5.5. You guys need to make a personal bet. You and the sportsish guy make a personal bet for, I don't know, someone like $40 million who comes out with more wins. And if they lose, whatever, you skip town. You'll be a general manager at Bojangles or something.
Yeah, I got to call our guy Harry and figure out if I can get a job over in Phoenix incognito or something. Yeah, we'll see what happens. I think that's a good bet, though. Sounds very fair on both sides. And the Panthers have to be better. So let's say over, Sal. Let's have some optimism.
I love it.
I like that. Now let's call up the captain. Let's call up the Riverboat captain and look at our Riverboat question this week. We got a good one. A lot of bigs are being discussed in the news right now. And the captain is asking us, Sal, what is the best matchup of the bigs? And I got the odds in front of us. Zach Edey, the star of Purdue, taking on DJ Burns. That is the favorite at 3-1. We got Akeem Olajuwon taking on Patrick Ewing back in the day in the 80s. That is 5-1. We got Brock Lesnar taking on The Undertaker, 10-1. Godzilla versus King Kong, that's in theaters right now at 25-1. And the field at even odds. What say you, Sal?
I spent more time thinking about the answer to this question than I did preparing for the bar that I failed a million times, bar exam. All right, so, because there's so many. I've seen a ton of World Star videos where there's 400-pound hillbillies going at it.
Yeah, always
good. Church's chicken. That's great. That could be it. Andre the Giant versus Big John Studd, WrestleMania 1, $15,000 body slam challenge. All the money ended up in the front row. That was great, too. But I have to say, the colossal jostle was between my friend Harry and his brother Scott. And we were watching some kind of college basketball game at the time. And Harry went up to Scott, and Scott's rolls were just hanging out of his shirt. And Harry smacked the side of his brother. And his brother freaked out because he was very angry. He had already lost a $4 parlay. So they went at it on each other. And I think I needed like 3 tranquilizer guns to separate them finally, like 750 pounds of humanity. So that, I would say, is the best big guy matchup I've ever seen.
Yeah, and you get that at even odds, which is a pretty good value there, Sal. So I think that's a good call. I like that pick. I'm going to go with the college basketball pick because I feel like I'm one of the few people that is trying to put college basketball on Front Street as best I can here at this company. Okay. Zach Edey, DJ Burns, I'll take the favorites there at 3-1. I think that's going to be a fun game. So two great picks and a lot of good bigs that we love here on the show. And Sal, I turn it over to you now because you're going to set some lines for us.
All right, let's do it. All right, WrestleMania, Saturday, Sunday, Philadelphia, city of brotherly love. I'm going to set a big underdog at The Rock ends up walking away with the title. Now, he doesn't figure into the potential title match between Cody Rhodes and Roman Reigns, but will he walk away with the title somehow? Plus 750 is the yes.
I like the value there. I like if The Rock is involved, I feel like there's some sort of deal that has been made to get him involved. And I feel like that deal would be the Universal Championship, Sal. Now, I'm no expert, but I feel like that's the way negotiations work. And if I'm The Rock, I'm not going back unless I'm the Universal Champion. So I'll take that at plus 750. I think that's good.
I love it.
Good
guy's a movie
there.
Star.
Yeah.
I like it too. Right. Yeah, Cody Rhodes is like minus 500 on some sites to win the whole thing. But that would be too boring at this point. Even though he's a delightful man. I've had him on Cousin Sal's Winning Weekend. All right, let's do another one. The Dodgers will hit over under 307.5 home runs this season. They had 10 going into their game Monday night. What do you think,
Dave? I'm going to go over, Sal. It's the year of offense. The MLB knows that we need offense, and people love home runs. I mean, every time you talk to anyone about my age, they talk about Mark McGwire, Barry Bonds, Sammy Sosa. That was the time everybody was locked in, even though the steroid scandal kind of hurt the interest a little bit. So I think baseball's going
allegedly,
right. So we're going back to offense in baseball. So I'm going to hit the over here. What say you?
Yeah, I'm going to say over as well. That number I came up with is what the Braves set the record at last year, 307. So, I mean, Betts has 4. Teoscar Hernandez, who bats like 16th in the lineup, he has 3. Freeman and Muncy only have 1. Ohtani hasn't even gotten cooking yet, so I think I'm going to go over as well.
We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to do some line look-aheads with Cousin Sal. Welcome back to Through the Ringer. We're here with Cousin Sal. And Sal, now it's time to do some line look-aheads. It's officially Final Four weekend. Are you fired up?
I'm fired up, but we're running out of games, yeah. Tate. I feel bad. I feel sad. Do you feel like I do in football when it's like, you know, conference championship?
Yeah, you get excited because we're finally going to crown a champion. And, you know, that, you know, you get a little like butterflies in your stomach or whatever about it. But, mm-hmm. you know, as soon as you crown them, it's over and you got to wait a whole nother year for it to happen. So,
well, right, maybe if they hide the scissors, the Nets will never be
not
down,
with Zach Edey, you know? Sal. I mean, if he's the one, he'll just rip it down. I mean, that we already saw that. True. He didn't even need a ladder. So we'll have some fun here. Let's do some line look-aheads, and let's start with the first game that's going to be on our television screens. We're going to have the Connecticut Huskies taking on Alabama. Alabama plus 11.5 in this game, a very wide margin, and the total 161.5. What do you like in this one, Sal? What do you see here?
The total is pretty surprising, right, too, for a college game, 161.5. But Bama's just up and down the floor. I was off. I played Guess the Lines with myself, and I thought it would be about 8.5, 9, 11.5. I guess you just can't make it less than double digits with this UConn, right, team. With all the teams. I mean, even San Diego State game, we didn't talk about this. You know how hard it is to look good against a team like San Diego State who just like kind of, you know, jumbles everything up, and you won by 30. It's disgusting after a while, and then it came back and annihilated Illinois. And I have to think on the other end, Tate, I know you don't love this Alabama team, right? They kind of got a little lucky. Their opponents mm-hmm. were 19 for 52 from three in the last two games, your team being one of those opponents, 22 for 36 from the line. You know, Carolina didn't help either. They're red hot from three on the other end, 28 in the last two games. So I think it kind of comes to an end. I think FanDuel is right in making this margin 11.5, and maybe.
Yeah, I think you're right, Sal. I mean, until we see a team actually compete with UConn in the NCAA tournament at this point, I mean, it feels like 15 points should be the line. I mean, they had a 30-0 run against Illinois. They beat San Diego State in a, you know, matchup of the national championship game from a year ago by 30 points. So even though 11.5 is a big line, it does not feel insane when it comes to this UConn team. And Dan Hurley is still convincing himself that he's being disrespected, Sal. He said that if they were Kansas or Carolina or Duke, people would talk about Connecticut a whole lot differently. So, you know, he is being able to create his own bulletin board material. So there you go. That's good for UConn. Next one, Sal, we're looking at Purdue, NC State. This is two engineering schools. Fan bases are very similar. They're going at each other. NC State, the 11 seed, they're still wearing the Cinderella slipper. The line is plus 9.5 for NC State. The total, 146.5. What do you like here and what do you see here, Sal?
You know, this also was higher than I thought it would be. I thought it would be about 7, right. Went to 9.5. I'm sick of losing money on NC State, I'll say that, so it doesn't really matter what I think. But I feel like we're going to know right away, right? Whoever gets the first foul, this would be a good game to live bet. Is it going to be DJ or is it going to be mm-hmm. 80, right? As soon as someone gets in foul trouble, you can forget it. You'll know the way this game is being called. But and then jump on the other side. So I'm at a loss for this, Tate. I know I should have a strong opinion with two games left before the finals, but I really don't.
What do you think? Friend Harry, he has been reaching out to me during this entire Purdue run. He is upset. He is up in arms. And Zach Edey got his first foul in the Elite Eight game at the 9:40 mark in the second half. Yeah. So, I mean, if he is able to skirt the officials for that long, I think it's hard to conjure up a world where, you know, Purdue does not win this basketball game, especially with DJ Burns being able to keep up with his conditioning, being able to battle with Edey. Can he guard him one-on-one? Can he stay on the floor, you know, with the foul trouble? So I think this is going to be a big test for NC State, but DJ Burns has defied the odds plenty of times before. Kevin Keats said that they were going there to win the national championship. NC State, they do have some sort of magic going on, Sal. They've been talking about feels like 83 since the semifinal game of the ACC tournament. They didn't even know the bracket, Sal, and they were talking about feels like 83. And they've basically got NC State into the Final Four in Phoenix. And I know I'll have some family there that are Wolfpack fans. I'll have some friends there that are Wolfpack friends. And if you've never met someone who's a Wolfpacker, they are loud, proud, and they're going to make people hear them in that arena. So I think NC State 9.5 is a good bet there. But like you said, Sal, anytime that you finally get on the hot team, it seems like they don't show up. So it's hard to convince yourself of that. But let's go with DJ Burns. Let's go with NC State.
DJ Burns should be the Panthers' number one pick, first right. round pick as an offensive lineman. If for the back you had an off first round pick, but you didn't, you traded it to the Bears.
I know. So I know we screwed up. We could have had DJ Burns. I do think it's very funny, Sal, that NFL scouts, they're salivating when they watch DJ Burns. NBA scouts, they're like closing their eyes.
eyes. They're like, get this guy out of my face. He can never make it in our league. That is the world.
Well, maybe he'll end up playing lacrosse or something.
There you go. Kevin Keats said he's going to be the president of the United States. So, you know, we finally got our third running mate for 2024. That'll be good. Let's track to the future here. Let's look at some of the props that we have on FanDuel Sportsbook. One of them is very fascinating. Biggest blowout. Obviously, we got two games to choose from. Alabama, UConn, the favorite, minus 160. NC State, Purdue, plus 100. Is there any value at taking NC State, Purdue, plus 100? Or do we just bet on the Huskies because they've been blowing everybody out?
I think the Huskies are the pick here because, all right, so they're minus 720 to win against Alabama. Mm-hmm. So you don't want to, right? You're not going to.
No value there.
You can't put, there's no value, right? Or it's cost prohibitive. But so you got to find better value in this UConn team to advance. I think this is the perfect thing. Minus 160 is better than minus 720, and the numbers are right there. We went over what they did to San Diego State and what they did to Illinois. These teams, I mean, you could play with them for a minute, and it doesn't even get scary. And then they take over. So I think that's a good bet.
And if you watch the Illinois game, I mean, it's 23-23. You probably convince yourself at that point, hey, this is going to be a game. Right. UConn's not going to blow them out. And just like that, 30-0 run, game's over. So UConn can hit that button really quickly. So I think that is a good pick there. Now we're looking at most outstanding player for the Final Four. Mm-hmm. Zach Edey, obviously the favorite at plus 195. Donovan Klingon from UConn, plus 220. Tristan Newton, plus 500. Cam Spencer, plus 650. Stephon Castle, plus 1900. So a lot of UConn guys are there in the mix. Is there any value that you see, Sal, on the board?
So this is a good way to do it, too, because you have, like I said, you want to bet UConn. You don't want to bet the minus 720. Now, this is for the semifinals and the finals.
Both
so
games.
You have to keep that in mind. But Zach Edey kind of gums up the works here because he is the best player. So you have to consider that. He's going to have the top spot all to himself at plus 195. So what you do is take two UConn players and hope that it works out, right? Who would you take? I would take Newton and Klingon, right? At plus 220 and 5-1 odds.
We got the win totals that are out. So I'm going to ask you this, Sal. Most likely to go over 11.5 wins, the Chiefs, the Niners, or the Ravens. Which one of those three do you believe in the most?
Yeah, so these are the top three teams with the biggest number for over on the wins, 11.5. I love that we're talking about this, by the way. I love it. I love it. It's April 1st or April 2nd. We're talking about futures here. I'm going to go San Francisco. They have the tough games, but all home games against the Chiefs, Cowboys, and Lions. Those are all division winners. Play them all at home. You know, they control their own destiny in that regard. So I think they get to 12 before these other
teams. Yeah, I think that's a good call. Russell Wilson is another track to the future we have here. Russell Wilson to be the Steelers starting quarterback week one, minus 720. What say you, Sal?
I might be an idiot, but I always liked an underdog, and especially a big underdog in this case, in Fields at plus 150. That could be an injury in training camp. And by the way, I'm not even sure that Wilson's better. Mike Tomlin could look at these two and be like, oh, why? What are we doing? Let's play Justin Fields. He's not obligated to start Russell Wilson. They're not paying either of these guys a bonanza of money, right? So might as well go with the better guy who could be Justin Fields at plus 450. Come later.
Yeah, it sounds like Mike Tomlin wants the competition. So if he wants the competition, right, that means one guy can beat out the other guy. And Justin Fields is younger, faster, and maybe passes the eye test. So I think there's good value there. Last one, NFL related, Micah Parsons to record 15 or more sacks in the regular season. You can get that number right now at plus 290. We love Parsons, Sal. Do you like that bet?
We love number 11, one of my favorite players. It's just frustrating to watch him because I feel like he gets double and triple team. Maybe this is sour grapes from a Cowboys fan. So that 15 number is tough. I like plus 290. It's just such a tough number. Once they see him zoning in on the record, they're going to figure out a way to stop it. I think better number, CeeDee Lamb, Tate. Could be contract issues, him and Dak. 13 plus touchdowns, plus 360 is what I like. He had 12 last year and sort of a short, slow start. He scored in 9 of his last 11 games. And his little brother plays flag football with my youngest son. So I'm going to go
with that. I like that. I like that connective tissue there between you and CeeDee Lamb. Love to see that. One last thing, Sal, before I let you go. The Tate debate this week. Nobody's brave enough to save it, so I guess I got to say it. The NCAA men's tournament is still really good, Sal. What say you? Do you agree with me? Because this is a very highly debated topic of conversation right now in the sports world.
I am with you, Tate, and anyone who disagrees should have joined us in Vegas last week when we did our race to 10.
Yeah.
You know, everybody, the drinks were flowing. Everybody was having a great time. I love everything about it. The broadcast, the cutaways to distraught fans and crazy coaches.
Crazy parents. Yeah.
Like I said, crazy parents. Like I said earlier, 18-year-olds missing clutch free throws at 4 in the morning in Ireland. You can't beat it, Tate. There you go. You want to sing that one shining moment?
Yeah. Yeah. Just give me 10 minutes right now. Just belt it out for you. It'll be good. The Tate debate, it never ends. It does feel like a lot of people don't want to give credit to the men's game, but I will do it on this show. We will do it on the show. So appreciate you, Sal. Where can we find all your work? We'll let you go. Enjoy your Tuesday.
Against All Odds on the Ringer Podcast Network. We'll hit you with two of those this week. And Cousin Sal's winning weekend on Friday. We got Clark Kellogg. You want me to say anything to Clark?
Yeah, just tell him thanks for all the great coverage. We appreciate it. You know what I mean?
That's boring. All right. Okay.
Say that. That'll be good. Sal, you're the best. Thanks so much for coming to the show. We'll see you next week.
See you, buddy.
All right, there you have it for another edition of Through the Ringer. Thanks to Kevin O'Connor. Thanks to Cousin Sal for coming on the show. We appreciate it. We will be back on Friday. We will be talking WrestleMania. That's right. It's happening this weekend. You got Final Four. You got WrestleMania. We'll be talking about it all here on Through the Ringer. Appreciate you tuning in, and we will see you on Friday.